I thought we'd spend a little bit of time talking about wealth. We've talked about industry and sloth and being a guardian of money and several things that have to do with riches and possessions. However, we've never actually said, can a Christian be wealthy? Can a person of faith be wealthy?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, and this one's just a pet peeve with me, which is probably why I put it here. People misquote that all the time. Mm-hmm. Money is the root of all evil. Money is not the root of all evil. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, not even all evil. Because you can be evil and money doesn't have anything to do with it. But it says, from which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So loving money and being greedy for money are the problems. And we have lots of examples of God blessing people with material goods and possessions, money. In Psalms, the generations of the upright will be blessed, wealth and riches will be in his house. If you're righteous, wealth and riches will be in your house. Now, riches don't always have to be money, but wealth pretty much means money, almost always. So, and we're going to talk as we get to the end of this about those prosperity preachers, the ones that say, give money here and you'll get, you know, give me 100, you'll get 1,000. We're going to get to that. We know, who's this talking about? The land was not able to support them that they might dwell together. Their possessions were so great they couldn't dwell together. Abraham and Lot. Isaac sowed in the land and reaped the same year 100-fold. 100-fold from what he sowed, and the Lord blessed him. And he became so prosperous that the Philistines envied him. And then if you remember that story, they closed up all the wells. They threw dirt in all the wells. I never have understood that, because surely they would want the water. What was wrong with them? But anyway, they just were jealous, and they just closed up the wells so he'd have to move on. So jealousy with money can be a real issue. And I know I've told all y'all this before, but you know, Randy's a CPA, and we have that CPA firm. And so we saw lots of people's money. You know, we took care of books, we saw tax returns. And in that kind of work, you just have to learn to think of it as numbers. It's just numbers. Because there are people that are making like a million times more money than you're making doing those tax returns. And if you let yourself start moving in that direction of thinking about the money, it's real easy for greed or covetousness to get to you. And I had one employee who was a friend of mine, and she couldn't get past it, because we did work for a lot of people that we were friends with socially. So she was working on the books of people that we would all go to dinner with, and she knew how much money they made, and it was a whole lot more than she made working for us. And she had a real struggle with that. And I finally, we had a long talk. I said, you just have to think of it as numbers. You can't let yourself think about the money part of it, because you will make yourself crazy, because there's always somebody that's got more money than you. Always. And there are a whole lot of people that have less than you do. So you just have to run numbers and not let yourself get into that.
And I think that's a good thing to dwell on. I feel wealthy. Mm-hmm. Because I know of the people that have so much less than I do.
That's right. And I think anyone in this country, even the poorest, are wealthy in comparison to a whole lot of people. But those of us in this room truly are wealthy people. We have warm homes. We have clothing. We can go wherever we want to go. We have plenty of food. And if we fall on hard times, we've got a lot of resources. We've got people who care for us. The state has things in place to care for us. So compared to those pictures I see of those little kids over in Pakistan trying to get water out of a muddy hole, you know, the wealth is great. But if we're not careful, because we have such an abundance of wealth, it's very easy to get into the, I want more. I need just a little more. And you hear people talk about the lottery. Well, if I had that much, I'd be comfortable. I'd be happy. It's not true. It is not true. I assure you that all those people, we had several clients that were millionaires many times over, and they worried about money every bit as much as any of the rest of us do, because they had a lot to lose. So it doesn't make you more comfortable and happy. Joshua told them to return with riches after this battle. You know, share the spoils. So there's nothing inherently wrong with wealth and riches. Here God says, I'll give you riches and wealth and honor such as none of the kings who've had were before you, nor any like you, shall ever have. Immense wealth. Job that God said, have you considered my servant Job? And was highly praising Job. And he had all of these 3,000 camels. Camels are nasty animals. They spit and they stink. But I think they're worth a lot if you live in the desert. 3,000 camels. And a large household. He was the greatest of all the people in the East. He was like the Sam Walton of this era. He had everything he could have needed. All given to him by God. And all restored to him by God later. But, and this lesson looks like it's going to be really long. I think we'll actually go through it fairly fast. We can't forget where those blessings spring, where they come from. And I think Deuteronomy 8 starts with verse 11. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I commend you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, and I left out a few so I could put it on the screen, then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it's he who gives power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. Who else had this attitude? I did this. The rich man who wanted to tear down his barns and build more. And he died that night. Well, I'm not sure that his... Well, no, let me back that up. I'm absolutely certain that his wealth was not the problem. It was his attitude. I'm going to keep all this for myself. Whereas he had so much it wouldn't fit in his barns, he could have easily said, let me share this. Let me go out and give some to the poor, to people who need this. But he said, no, I'm going to keep it all for myself. And we're going to talk a little more about that later. I think that is a very strong temptation when it comes to money. So the Lord established the kingdom in his hand, and all Judah gave presents to Jehoshaphat, that he had riches and honor and abundance. Another example of God giving the wealth. Hezekiah humbled himself, because, you know, before he wasn't so humble. And he humbled himself in the pride of his heart, so that the wrath of the Lord didn't come upon them. And he had very great riches and honor, and he made himself treasuries for silver, for gold, for precious stones, for spices, shields, and all kinds of desirable items, storehouses for the harvest of grain, wine, and oil, and stalls for all kinds of livestock, and folds for flocks. Moreover, he provided cities for himself, and possessions of flocks and herds in abundance, for God had given him very much property. Would he have had all that had he not humbled himself in the eyes of God? Isn't that why it tells us that he did that? Honor the Lord with your possessions and the first fruits of all your increase. How do we honor God with our possessions?
We give it back on the first day of the week.
We give some back. What are some other ways that we honor God with our possessions?
Helping others personally.
We help others. We don't say, you know, I put it in the offering tray. I've done my part now. That's good. And Chris isn't here for me to brag on her. And while I think they put themselves in some iffy situations, I don't think you'll find more giving people than Chris and Kyle. They were at the house the other night, and they had to leave because they had to go home and cook for Sabrina, the lady that came with them Sunday. If they find somebody in need, that they're going after that. And I just find it touching and humbling, and it makes me think.
Well, and a lot of that, too, is because she used to be homeless
right.
in their position.
Right.
So she
really understands it.
Yes.
She really does. Now, here's an interesting thing to think about. When we put our faith in the riches, we deny God. It says so very clearly. If I've made gold my hope, or have said to find gold, you're my confidence. If I've rejoiced because my wealth was great and because my hand had gained much, this would be an iniquity deserving of judgment, for I would have denied God who is above. So if you're Scrooge McDuck sitting in your vault and counting your gold coins, you know, he sits there and just plays with them, throws them up in the air, you're denying that God gave you that wealth. You're saying, look what I've done. Look how I've made myself wealthy and powerful. And I think all anyone would have to do is talk to Job, read about Job, and know how quickly all of that can be taken. All of that can go away. I had a friend one time who had a child who actually was terminally ill. And this friend, family made a lot of money. And he looked at me and said, if all you have is money problems, you don't have problems. He said, money problems will resolve themselves one way or the other. You'll go broke, you'll get it fixed, but it will end. But if you have a child who's terminally ill, that's a problem. And that stayed with me these 40 years, that money problems aren't problems. They're temporary annoyances. And even if you wind up with nothing, it's still over. It's still finished. You can start again. The righteous shall see and fear, and they'll laugh at him. They're talking about a rich man here. Here's a man who didn't make God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. The righteous can and should have a heart that understands that wealth is fleeting and that it's of God. Boys. Just excuse me a minute.
Quit talking. Sit quietly, lift your books, or draw. I don't want to hear any more noise, and I don't want you to know about my class again. You understand me?
Sorry. So the righteous can see it, and they'll laugh. They know. And unfortunately, the rich who have trusted in their riches don't know. Our riches won't protect us if we practice evil. Cole, if I hear your voice again, even whispering, I'm going to come spank you. This is your last warning. The rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a hall, high wall in his own esteem. What does that mean?
He thinks he's safe.
I've got all this money, I'm safe. And then your health goes. Or there's an earthquake and everything, like in Dallas, and everything you had is gone. Or there's a tsunami, like that horrible, scary thing a few years ago that just sucked out, 10,000 people, 15,000 people, something like that.
Last night I was watching Tornado Alley, and it was showing the Moore, Oklahoma tornado, and it was just...
So all that wealth, while we do acquire wealth, and I think it's a God-given right to acquire wealth, we need to know that it's fleeting and that it comes from God. Wealth gained by dishonesty will be diminished, but he who gathers by labor will increase. So if you decide you're going to be Butch and the Kid and you go out and rob banks, you're eventually going to lose that wealth. Or any other kind of dishonesty. What was the guy that had the big Ponzi scheme and was very wealthy and burning, I think, something. And wound up in prison for the rest of his life, almost. Because he had great wealth. He was hugely wealthy. And he got it off the backs of people that he built.
The bank teller up here at Bank of America a few years ago.
She embezzled money, and now she's in prison, federal prison. There's no parole in federal prison, by the way. If you're in, you're in until it's over.
For life? Or
Billy
for
Saul?
Sentence?
Well, for the sentence. There's no parole during the sentence. Billy Saul, who died not very long ago, and he built millions from people. And the saddest part was, of course, that he was a member of the church, and they plastered that every time a story about him came up. (Clears throat) But you're filled with judgment, do the wicked. Judgment and justice take hold of you, because there is wrath. Beware lest he take you away with one blow, for a large ransom wouldn't help you avoid it. Will your riches, or all your mighty forces, possessions, people, shields, keep you from distress? It won't. It won't. A little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. It brings us back to the widow's mite. She gave all that she had, and she was more blessed. Cole, do you not understand? Close your mouth. Cole, Anderson Cole Merle, quit whispering. I can hear you, and it's distracting. And I like this one. I'm not sure that I had ever really focused on this verse before. As a partridge that broods but doesn't hatch, so is he who gets riches, but not by right. It will leave him in the midst of his days, and at the end he'll be a fool. So she sits, and she never gets any eggs, and he's gotten his wealth by dishonesty and scamming people, and in the end, it's nothing. He doesn't have anything. He's worked all that time, and he winds up in prison for, you know, 20 years. I thought about that the other day. I was watching some show and somebody was sentenced to 15 years. 15 years. And that's a long time for to be away from your family, to not be able to pick your clothing, not be able to pick your food, not be able to say, I want pizza today. You know, to not walk around when you feel like it. I mean, it's just, I don't know that I could face such a thing, so I'm going to try to work hard on straight and narrow. So God expects us to care for this material wealth that he's blessed us with. He even expects us to increase it. We're to be good stewards of our material blessings. So if God has given us wealth, we can't squander it. That's a sin. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. It all comes from God. Y'all excuse me. Cole, come here. Cole, come here.
Separate them, put him on the other side.
You want to sit up here by me? Sit. And we know about the parable of the what? What was the name of the coins that were given?
The talents.
Talents. Thank you. Would not come. I can think of about 40 different names for words for money of some kind. So he says on that, when he got to the third one, who proudly handed the money back. Here's what you gave me. No. You should have deposited it. What'd I tell you, Cole? Put your bottom on that bench. At coming back, I would have received what I gave you, plus interest. Plus interest. So it's not wrong to use our money to gain wealth. I've heard people say, well, I'm certainly, you know, grateful for what God's given me, but it's not my job to be seeking money. Well, it's not to be seeking it above seeking anything else. But the world works in a certain way, and one of the ways is if you take care of your money, you can get more. And you should be doing that. We can't count on the riches. They're not going to be what saves us. So you have to be careful. Psalm 62:10, I really like this one. If riches increase, do not set your heart on them. Just because you're wealthier now than you were before doesn't mean you won't be in need sometime later. Don't set your heart on those riches. Don't let that be where your happiness lies. Now, I have to work on that a little. I really like my house. I like my house. It feels homey. It feels safe. It's where I feel comfortable and nurtured and protected. And I have to remind myself that if a tornado came through and took that away, I still have everything that matters. It would be a difficult thing for me to separate myself from that house, and I know that that's something I have to work on because it's just an object. Just an object. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. Can't trust in the riches. They are fleeting. They can leave. Well, what, the stock market, how many years ago when it went and everybody lost about half their investments? Everybody I knew that had any money in the stock market was just, they said, it's not what it was. I don't have enough. And of course, we do have enough. We just have to, you can't say I don't have enough in my mind. Back up, this is my opinion. You can't say I don't have enough if you're still living in the big house, you're still driving, in our case, six cars. Don't even get me started on that. And you can't say, I don't have enough. If you don't have enough to live that lifestyle, you quit living that lifestyle. You move. You sell things. You make a different choice so that there is physically enough. Because if you don't have enough physically, then you're not going to give to the Lord the way you need to be giving to the Lord. It's going to impact your care for others. Riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. Did y'all see my eagle fly away? I like the phrase. Riches certainly make themselves wings. And you know, for most of us, that doesn't have to be something awful coming in and taking them. For most of us, we're the ones who do it. We give our riches wings. Fly away. Riches aren't forever. The crown doesn't endure for all generations. I think that's the biggest thing that the United States is missing right now. These empires don't last forever. We are the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world right now. So was Britain. So was China. So was Greece, Rome.
We're also over 200 years, and that's about
that's what scary talk.
The nations have lasted. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Something to think about.
It is scary to me.
You know, we're really not wealthy in the USA. And we make paper money, we print it,
oh, yeah.
We spread it around. There's nothing to
No, we're out. Wealthy in resources.
We're
wealthy in the
we're
resources.
We're now a paper
same.
Nation.
We are. And have been for
easy
many, many
to
years.
Blow us over.
Yep.
China owns us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just paper.
They're struggling now, too. It's some of these others that are upcoming that frighten me. That their economics are getting better and their weaponry is getting better. But you're right. We're paper products.
Yeah.
And service-oriented as opposed to labor.
And as Christians, that just shows us how temporal life is.
It is.
Yeah.
It does.
Just did one day of gone the next.
I don't know what kind of a nation they'll live in.
I know. I'm talking about that.
In Revelation, it says, because you say I'm rich, I've become wealthy, I have need of nothing. You don't even know that you're wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. You don't even know because you've wrapped yourself in these temporal things, in these things that feel good for the moment, and don't even realize that you've got nothing because all you have is money. Wealth can blind us. We can't have our hearts in two worlds. In Proverbs, it says, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. But then we get to Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. You can't serve God and mammon. But I think we sometimes just think of that in terms of worship and our activities. I think it's about money as well. That we have to use our wealth and our riches to serve God. And that's sometimes really hard for people. So, some questions to think about. Is your money more important than God? Is it more important to you? Do you give each Lord's Day with a cheerful heart? Have you reconsidered your offering lately? You know, when Roger and I got married, we had to sit down and talk about what we had each been offering. And I use the word offering because contribution sounds to me like something somebody takes out of your paycheck. I just personally don't like it. So I always use the word offering. Because our status was very different married than it was single. Even though the amount of money coming in was the same, we were only supporting one household instead of two, which means we had much more discretionary income. So I think it's very important for us all to reevaluate as we go along. Yes, I've been putting this amount in for the last 6 years. Is that what it is now? Is that where I am now? Have I gotten children paid out of the house? Have I gotten the house paid off? Has my circumstance changed to allow me to do more for the Lord? Do you share with others? Do you look for opportunities to help your brethren and others? And I think that's an easy thing to overlook, not out of greed or unkindness, but because we get busy and we forget to think. Yvonne?
In 1 Timothy 6:18, it says, "Let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share."
Willing to share. And I think it's so important. And I think the more important piece of everyday living on it is, we'll say, of course I'm willing to share. But do we share? Do we put it into action? And I think a lot of it is because we forget. We get busy, we get caught up in the world, and we don't stop to think about who might be in need and who might need just a little help. We have a couple that we're not close friends with, but know fairly well. And Roger was a friend with him at the senior center, and he died recently. And I don't think they had anything. They live in an apartment that's about this big across from the senior center. And she called Roger the other day and asked if she could borrow $20 till the end of the month. Now, this was odd for several reasons. First of all, oh my goodness, why does she not have $20 till the end of the month? You know, we need to get in and find out what's going on there. Secondly, we're not close. It would be very much like me calling someone I knew from work, you know. And it just upset me terribly that she's in this situation where she's going to have to ask somebody who is not very close to her and ask for such a small amount. We, of course, went that night and gave her more than that. But I need to go back to her and say, what's your real need? Is it every month that you're down to, you don't have $20? Was this a one-time thing, or is she in real and honest need every month? So I've got to get back over there and talk with her, because if you're asking to borrow $500, that's one thing. If you're asking to borrow $20, that's tough. That's tough. So I've got to make sure I follow up on that. And it's easy to get all caught up in what I'm doing, kids and grandkids and my mother and, you know, all that, and forget that this woman may really be in desperate need. So I think we have to work harder to take our opportunities to help. And of course, we know that the Christians sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. Easy to say. I think it would be very difficult to do. Because it's quite different from saying, come to my home, I'll feed you and shelter you. Because I'm not giving up my house. They sold everything and distributed it to those who needed it.
I like to think that if that ever happened here, that we would be willing to do that. But
I do too. I do too. I like to think that I could be willing to do it. And like I said, it's a different thing than saying, I mean, I have that big house. I'll feed and clothe and shelter anybody that needs it.
Definitely. Would you tell me? Jean has said, I think she said 17 people she could sleep in her house. So
well, that's without the blow-up beds. But now it does depend on gender and age.
Oh.
You can't just throw people in beds together. So, but if everybody with the right gender and age, I can sleep 17 without the blow-up beds. So yes. But see, that's not really giving. If somebody needs a place to live and I give them a place to live, because I got a place to live, it doesn't change anything about my life. You know? Selling?
Question.
It does.
I have a question.
What's your question?
How to say it. I know two or three instances of people that have really nice homes. And they're hesitant to ask people into their home, Christians into their home, because they have maybe very little. And they feel like...
They feel like they're showing off.
I guess, yes. And I don't know how. They shouldn't.
No. And if there is a problem, it's actually the problem of the person who's feeling that way, greed or covetousness. But I understand what they're saying. I did actually have a person who was a member here a very long time ago come out to the house. We were better than we've been lately about having people out. And this person said, "So you kept all this up by yourself as a single woman?" Yeah, they ate a lot of beans and cornbread, but yeah, because I wanted my kids to stay in their home. But it was very uncomfortable for me, because it was very apparent that he was thinking, "This is too much, why do you have it?" or something. It just felt bad. And I was happy when he left.
Gina, I'm going to refresh your memory just a little bit. I know several situations where you have taken people into your home.
Let's make up.
One room. And so I could list quite a few people I love very much.
Well, thanks. There have been a series of people that have come through that house. But you know, I grew up like that. My mother came from a big family, and y'all all know where I grew up, on Winter Street, nice little house. We were the rich relatives, my mother's family. And they would show up, and I remember many times being blasted out of bed with her saying, "Aunt Marie's here, I've made a pallet for you on the floor, get up, because Marie's getting my bed." And I had cousins who lived with us while I was growing up. Mother and Daddy had one of my cousins live with them when they were first married. His brother lived with them for a while. And, you know, this tiny little house, which for me was big and wonderful. I mean, it was everything we needed. But when I think back on their openness to people who needed it, and plus they've had several people stay with them at various times past that. So
she's been a great influence on me in doing it.
Yeah. Pretty good lady. I like her. She told me yesterday she didn't have any anesthetic. She said, "I just remember being there." And I said, "What you had was twilight sleep, and that's why you don't remember that you had anesthetic. But believe me, you had anesthetic." Well, anyway, that selling your possessions, that one always strikes me, because I wonder how good I'd be at that. But yeah, 17 people if they're all right, gender and ages and sizes, because some of the beds are smaller than others.
In other words, all of us ladies can go, but leave your husbands outside.
Yes, they have to sleep in the pool room. Leave them sleeping bags. In Matthew, Jesus said to him, "But if you want to be perfect, sell what you have and give to the poor." He couldn't do it, could he? He went away sorrowful because he had great possessions. So he was sorry he couldn't do what Jesus wanted him to do. But he still chose the possessions instead of doing what was right. And I'll tell you, this one worries me. I hope that I would be willing to say, "You bet, it's all gone." But I'm such a nester, and I'm such not an adventurer, you know, that it would frighten me a great deal.
Several years ago, when Joe was in college, and we lived in this little 28-foot trailer with Julie, she was just a baby, and I've never been to Texas, so Texas was
foreign country,
and it's also called Tornado Alley. And up there, and I was listening to the radio, and this tornado or something hit Springfield or something, it was moving toward Rolla. We were scared to death. We got up at midnight, and we were still up at night, got Julie up, and took her into Rolla to this man that we knew from church, knocked on his door. And he took us into his den, which was in the basement. We stayed there about an hour. We felt so silly afterwards. But Luther was very accommodating.
Yeah.
And we got up, and it was just as calm. We got into the mall and everything and went back. But I was scared to death.
Well, you know, just being a member of this family is so incredible. We went to SeaWorld a couple of weeks ago, and we wanted to go on the train. and we couldn't rent a car because we got in at 10 o'clock and we had to leave at 7 a.m. and you couldn't get the car or give it back to them. So we took the bus to SeaWorld, and our hotel was just a half a block from the train station, but then there was church. So we just called. And the preacher came and picked us up and took us to church. And my friend, y'all have heard me talk about her, I work with, I was telling her about it, she said, I would never do such a stupid thing. I said, well, it's not a stupid thing. And I know you wouldn't because you don't understand who we are and what we do. I said, but it's a very common thing. And one time I was traveling, this was years ago, I was dating a guy who was a cop, and I had to travel for business, and I was going to call somebody from church to come pick me up. And he said, you're not getting in the car with a stranger. I said, not a stranger, somebody from church, and they're going to send somebody's grandma to pick me up. You know, they're not going to put me in an uncomfortable position. But his cop brain just couldn't cope with that at all. But we have such an assurance, and that is not to say that there aren't people who shouldn't be calling themselves Christians, but they're few and far between, I think.
And no matter where you go.
No matter where you go.
Even out of this country.
Mm-hmm. He's talking about the seeds. The one that fell upon the thorns are those who, when they've heard, go out and are choked with cares, choked with riches. I just thought that was such great terminology. We can let those riches grow up around us like thorns, and they keep everything else out of our life. If you are constantly working because you have to gain more money, or you are constantly working and you don't have time for your family, or you can't come to services, or you can't go to the other things that, you know, the singings or the potlucks or whatever, because you just always have to be working to add more money. Now, there is a difference in my mind of working the job you have because you're taking care of your family, or working those 15 others that you add just so you can have more money. And I just thought this was a great phrase that we ought to think about, how riches can be thorns that choke us, choke things out of us. I think we can get through, bear with me just a few minutes. Our leaders have to have the proper attitude about money. Don't you find it interesting in all those qualifications for elders and deacons? They all say not greedy for money. Now, in larger places, and this is what we're going to talk about next week, that prosperity doctrine, you know, put 100 in the plate, you'll get 1,000 back. Those people are greedy for money. That's their motivation. That's why they want to be a part of that Christian, and I use that very, very loosely, denomination. But God says, in all these, not violent. I mean, not violent's one of the things. And not greedy for money is right there with it. Material things aren't the treasure of a Christian. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. Loving favor rather than silver and gold. The lady at the bank who embezzled the money, don't you know she wishes she had her name cleared rather than having that money she took?
I really liked her too.
Yeah, I know. So did Mother and Daddy. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? If you have all those riches, and in the end, nobody has the riches in the end. They're gone. But what profit is to a man if he gains the whole world and he himself is destroyed or lost? And I know it's the same thing, but I think that one says it maybe to us on a temporal way a little better. That if you lose your very self in money and riches, you haven't gained anything. If you lose your family, if you lose all that closeness with people, if you lose your ability to look at everyday life and everyday people and the real world, what have you gained? If you've built yourself a, you know, Michael Jackson, very, very, very wealthy man, built himself into such a strange little fort, you know, that he didn't have people in his life. And I can't think of the guy's name. Who started TWA, very wealthy, went a little nuts in his older years. Y'all would know who I meant if I could bring his name to my head.
That's not Howard Hughes.
Yes, it is Howard Hughes. And he did start to begin. So, God may grant us wealth. He's done that for many of his faithful, but how we use that blessing's up to us. And we'll be held accountable for that. Now, next week, we're going to look at those other handouts that you have about this prosperity gospel that's around. And it is much more pervasive than most of us think. Those are some of the high rollers that are out there. But it's seeping into lots and lots of, quote, mainline denominations. That God's going to bless us materially because we've almost bribed him. Lord, I'll worship you and I'll do what you want me to if you give me these riches. I don't think that's the way it works with the God of heaven.
They're the ones that are rich.
All right, well, we blew through this pretty fast. Questions, comments, anything you want to add?
Got one thing. Kind of get a problem with me and you being a little black and everything. I never know
who needs
something here. But somebody tells me.
Yeah, it's hard to know because most of us won't talk about it. But I guess what I can say is that when anybody goes through any kind of a life transition, there's often a need. Even if it resolves itself a little bit later. You know, the death of a spouse can put somebody into financial hardship for a time. Until things can get sorted and situated. Divorce certainly does. And,
you know. Years ago, some time ago, I was a shoe store. And this woman was working. We got to talking, and she was probably divorced in May. She was working. And she said she lost her husband, I think, 3 years before, and he left her nothing.
Yeah.
And she had to work. That's all she had to survive.
I assure you that when I go through those drive-thru places and there's a woman my age flipping burgers, I am incredibly grateful for my life that I'm not there. Because that's a hard way to earn a living.
Did Jay send everybody out? He got a thing on the internet yesterday about Social Security.
I had seen that before.
It is a federal, what is it called?
Entitlement program.
So me.
Well, I'm entitled, all right, because they took my money from me and bring me back later.
That's what this was about. Meaning they can cut it off. Which I already knew, but I had not seen it written down.
We had a raise this year.
And how much of it did they take back? Taxes.
Well, thank you, ladies. Thanks for bearing with me while we just kind of pushed through it. But I hope it had some value.